Hey, welcome, friend, to the Town Hall Academy from Remarkable Results Radio, the only and original weekly subject forum for the aftermarket perpetual student. It's Carm Capriato. Nice to have you here. And we continue to work hard to share the voices, ideas, and insights that are shaping the future of the aftermarket. But you knew that. Now, this episode covers one of your most important responsibilities as a leader, risk management. You're going to count this episode as one of your favorites, if not one of the most important from this year. An abundance of key takeaways or lessons as you listen to learn just one thing about insurance. Here's a taste of what's to come.
How I operate changes what insurance I need. Or every time anything changes, I'm calling him. Does this impact me? Do I need to do anything? Because I don't know what I don't know.
Hello, friend. Carm Capriato here, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy. Hey, did you know that we broadcast the Town Hall Academy every Friday at noon Eastern on Facebook? It's live, and then we release the podcast the following Thursday. If not, you know now. Now, we also repurposed the video on my YouTube channel. You can watch all the Town Hall Academy videos and listen to the podcasts on my website at remarkableresults.biz/academy. It's kind of cool to watch everybody in action. Hey, you know that contactless service is key to keeping your bays full while remaining 6 feet apart. Shopware's completely digital workflow will wow your customers and keep your profits up. Tara from Topol Service Center commented recently, "Thank God for this amazing cloud-based software during this difficult time. She can't imagine life without it now. Thanks to Carolyn," she says, "at Team Shopware." So book a demo right now at getshopware.com. Hey, did you know that along with Tom Hamm, I've started a lively weekly aftermarket magazine show? Tell me what you think. Go to aftermarketweekly.com and watch the first two episodes. Yep, you've got a weekly magazine video show covering topics that you need to know everything about the aftermarket. The big feature is a shop tour each and every week. We broadcast live every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time. Please join us. Okay, now put your leadership hat on right now and listen to learn just one thing about insurance. However, I'm telling you, you're most likely going to take away about 10 important things about insurance risk management. Hey, with me is Bambi Crozier, Kim Auerheimer, and insurance specialist David Curry, the senior account executive at IGO Insurance Agency. Now, there's no need to take notes. You may want to, and I understand, but however, as a fan of the show, you know we create the key talking points that will make for a great meeting agenda. Find them at remarkableresults.biz/A172. Hey, be sure to review our first episode on insurance risk. It is at Academy, the Town Hall Academy, episode 161. Scroll through your subscription app and you'll find it. Now, if you did not hear that one, it should be on your list. Now, get insurance smart. Today is this perfect little marriage between episode 161 that we did, well, how many, 9, 10 weeks ago with Bambi and Kim. And we also had a gentleman named Brad Hazelwonder on. Bambi's back, Kim is back, and David Corey is with us, who is a senior account executive at IGO Insurance Agency. Hey, David.
Hello, Carm. How are you?
I'm terrific. Glad to have you here. Now, Bambi is, of course, the car clinic in Lowell, Arkansas.
Morning.
Her and husband, Neil, and Kim, CS Automotive, Brentwood, Tennessee. Her and husband, Rob. Two of my most favorite ladies in the whole world. So thank you for joining us. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to this insurance coverage, it was called Are You Underinsured? That was in episode 161. And we were all done with it. And at the end, we said, well, let's get together and do a what if. Well, between that time and now, COVID-19 hit. So
yeah.
I've been so busy doing other things. But yet, as I think about reinventing our business and doing other things, no doubt I believe this is an episode that should be critically important as we move through, because every year, I guess, we have a chance to reevaluate our insurance. We've got 15 incredible what-ifs that Bambi actually wrote for us, and then David took a look at and said, hey, let's put these in some kind of order, you know, of level of importance. And let me start, and I'll let the ladies do the rest of them. Who can I call to review my insurance to make sure I have everything I need and compare what I have to what others in my industry have? So it's kind of like sitting down with your agent and grilling that person, isn't it, David?
That's exactly what it is. You know, when you're looking for to design your insurance program, your agent's critical. You know, I can't fix a car. I'd lift the hood. years ago, I might be, you know, back in my teen years, I could kind of tell you what was going on under the hood. I can't anymore, you know? And it's kind of the same thing with an insurance policy. You may know the basics, but the fine print's going to be beyond you. So you want to find somebody, number one, that you trust. The best way to figure that out a lot of times is to meet people, look them in the eye, maybe go have lunch, spend a minute with them and get to know them. Find someone you trust and then find an agent that specializes. The guy with Federated was a good example. They specialize in the automotive industry, as do I. So you want to find an agent that's got experience, that specializes, and that you trust. And it, once you get those three factors, you know, sometimes it makes sense to take a couple good agents that you've identified in your area and have them compete with each other. Go through some market selection, have them look at your business, fill out all their risk reviews and everything else they have, and then compare what they bring to the table.
I have been privileged to work with a number of shops and kind of see their struggles with insurance. And it's really shocking when you sit down and apples to apples, what you have and what you should have, the disparity, the difference in coverage. So what we're seeing and is if your uncle, your customer, or whatever, and they sell insurance on the side, you're probably getting a good insurance, but it's you're not fully covered as you should, like IGO or Federated, where they know automotive. And I've been really surprised at the discrepancy of coverage of what they should have and what shops actually do have. And unfortunately, you're not going to know it until you need it. And that's the scary part of it.
You know, the scariest part, and, you know, having been in business before and written a ton of paychecks, signed a lot of paychecks of my own, you'd sit down in front of your insurance agent, and I kind of had to know what was around the next corner in the industry that I worked in, and that's where you were a student of. But when it came to insurance, overnight, things can change. So you have to learn to ask the right questions, right, Bambi?
That's exactly right. You got to know exactly what to ask. Sometimes you can't know. I'll just be honest. You just can't. You don't know what you don't know. And I learned that. We have had 4 different insurance companies that have taken care of us over our 8 years. In the last 2 years, we've obviously been with Federated. And sitting down with someone who specializes in your industry, I think it's really important. Because if they don't, they may not have enough experience in your industry to even guide you. They may not know. And that was really eye-opening for me. So I really appreciate someone who specializes in our industry, who's guiding me, who's an expert.
And David mentioned right before we caught on air, it's like, I've seen all of these situations. If somebody, if you have a, we'll just throw out a State Farm that doesn't specialize in automotive, they haven't seen all these different situations. What if there's 10 cars in your shop and it burns down? What happens about the, you know, what happens with those cars and the value of the cars and the proper coverage too?
Bambi, I'll start with you. Let's take our number two on the list.
Kim kind of alluded to it. What if my building burns down? The things that we need to think about are my tools covered? Are my clients' cars covered? Are my employees' wages covered? Are my lost revenues covered? What is covered if my building burns down? And does it change if we're at fault or if we're not at fault?
Most good policies are going to cover just about everything that you mentioned to a certain extent. One thing that I'd like to bring up that I have seen over the last few years is coinsurance on your property policy. Either of you, anybody here know what coinsurance is? Have you ever seen that where it says 80% coinsurance or 90% on a policy? Do you know what that means?
No.
Well, I've seen it on a health coverage where no matter what, I owe that.
Okay. Completely different. So let's say you're on 80% coinsurance form for your building.
Mm-hmm.
That means you don't pay, they pay 80 and you pay 20. What it means is you have to be within 80% of the actual replacement cost or you face some pretty hefty penalties. So number one, you want to make sure you're close to insured to value or you could suffer some pretty hefty deductibles or penalties at time of loss.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been seeing lately is, especially with older buildings, for garage construction, because a lot of it was unfinished, you're looking at maybe $50, $60, $70 a square foot. Well, right now, the last round of big claims we had last year was $110, $115, $120 a square foot replacement cost. So if you've got $70 a square foot replacement cost on your policy, but the actual is $120, you got a problem. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you're at least 80% insured to value, in some cases 90. So if you don't know, ask a, you know, they've got these cost estimators at the carriers that you can use. So that's the first thing. The second thing you want, the biggest claim issue you're going to have is the business interruption, because that's going to be the biggest thing. It's the income. Replacing the building is a big deal, but replacing your income and everybody else's income is even bigger. Because think about it, if you're out of 6, 8 months, 10 months, you're out of business, how's everybody getting paid? You rebuild your building, all your employees are working somewhere else because you couldn't pay them. So you want to make sure that your business interruption, your business income, typically for a garage, I can get them what's called 12 months actual loss sustained, which means you're going to get paid for an entire year. Actual loss sustained means whatever it is, it is. Now, you can't make a profit on it. Typically, what I tell people is they're going to replace your income and all your ongoing bills. They're going to keep you even while you're out of business, okay? The employees as well, okay? But in these different contracts, there's fine print. Sometimes they'll pick up ordinary payroll. Sometimes they won't. Most do. But then you go further in the fine print, and they're going to pick up the ordinary payroll, but they'll put a limitation on it, like 90 days, 60 days, not to throw rocks. Nationwide does a 60-day. If you're a Nationwide person, better check with your agent, because they do a 60-day limit on payroll on their business interruption. So you have to look at the fine print.
Okay, so here's what I'm learning out of here, David and Kim and Bambi. You go for that coverage. You get all the fine print in front of you. And you've got to read it. You got to take a highlighter. You got to take a pen, and you got to sit down with your agent and says, explain to me exactly what this means. Don't sign anything unless you know, and then do your own what-if scenario with your agent before you sign and pay for that policy. The exact things you were telling us, David, right here, are the things that we do not know what's around the next corner. Who would have thought COVID would have hit? So think about a catastrophic loss and the protection that you need.
I think the comment for that is really key. And we might get down later on equipment breakage or damage, but you got to know what the replacement value of your vehicle is. It actual cost? And that's what David was just saying. Is it actual replacement value? Our machine that's 10 years old, we're getting ready for capital, and, you know, we're saving capital funds to replace it anyway. It got damaged. We got a brand new one at current cost, not what the value of that machine was at 10 years old. So I think that the replacement value is very important. And then David nailed it, is make sure you know how long your business interruption coverage is, because that is that was something that came up with this whole COVID deal. There's a virus clause in most insurances, so it was fine. But know the replacement value, if it's actual cost or the co-insurance, for sure.
I think COVID needs to be a what-if scenario that we need to cover right now. There's so much stuff that I'm hearing about. If someone gets sick, they may go after your workman's comp. I'm not reading enough about that. But David, is there anything that has to do with COVID and illness and or death that you in the insurance agencies are speaking to right now?
Short answer, not a lot of coverage in a property and casualty policy or a workers' comp policy for the COVID. Back around, I guess it was the swine flu, SARS, H1N1, whatever, which 10, 11, 12 years ago, I saw it right after that last pandemic. Every single policy that I saw come out had a virus and bacteria exclusion on it. A lot of them had it before, but after that, they all have it. So when you look at those policies, there's exclusions for all of that. Now, there is coverage under workers' comp if you get a disease at work or through work because of work. However, most states have precedent set in the courts where if it could have happened to you anywhere, they're not going to put it on your workers' comp. For instance, I had a heart attack years ago. It runs in my family. I was a little overweight. I used to smoke. I'm at risk for a heart attack, right? I had one. I got a few stents. I'm fine. What if I'd had it at work? I had it at home, but what if I'd had it at work? Should I put it on workers' comp? No, they're not going to put it on workers' comp because it could have happened anywhere. It's a natural course of events. Same thing with the COVID. They're not going to, just because you caught the COVID and you might have been at work a lot that week, they're not going to put it on the workers' comp.
But they're trying, though. I mean, that's just...
They're trying.
Well,
lawyers will do anything they want to do. So here's the other thing that I'm telling people. Certain state legislations, from what I'm reading, are going to may force the issue on business interruption for a COVID loss. Okay, you're shut down because of COVID. It says here that you may have some business interruption, but you're excluding it because of the bacteria and virus exclusion. Some of the states are starting to push the issue, and there are some class action lawsuits. So what I've told some of my customers is, if you're closed down because of this thing, file the claim. Make the carrier say no, but if everything flips and legislation pushes these claims through, you're already in line.
It'll bankrupt the insurance industry.
Probably so. Close to it.
Thank you so much. Who's up next?
This is one that always makes me nervous, and so we have policies in place to do everything to keep this from happening. But what happens if we're driving a client's car and have an accident? Is the car covered under our policy, the customer's policy? Are the people covered? Is my employee covered? And then what if there's actual damage to property, to real property?
I like to kind of do a real world kind of a scenario. So you've got a soccer mom's car and you do the brake job on it and you do something wrong, and God forbid soccer mom hits a tree. You want to cover the tree, right? Or let's say she hits another vehicle. You want to cover the other people, right? And you want to cover the soccer mom and you want to cover the van too, correct? Because it's because of your work. If you've got a good policy, all of that's going to be covered. Okay. The van will be covered under the liability. Soccer mom's going to be covered under the liability. The other people that you may hit are going to be covered under your liability as well, under your general liability, all that consequential damage that happens. Now, the whole thing flips a little bit if you're driving the car. Okay, so soccer mom's driving the car, her own vehicle. Now, let's say you're test driving a vehicle and you hit something. Though you did the work okay, you just screwed up. You know, the guy wasn't paying attention to hit someone. You should have non-owned auto liability on your commercial garage policy. Okay, you've heard that hired a non-owned auto liability term. Everybody that has a garage should have that. So that non-owned auto liability is going to cover whatever you hit, and it's going to cover the vehicle. Now, there's a separate coverage called garage keepers, okay? That's where the car itself is covered. So one covers the liability, the non-owned auto, and the garage keepers is the physical damage for the vehicle. It also covers acts of God, typically, if you've got it written correctly. So the employee in the car is covered somewhere else. Where would they be covered? Anybody got a guess?
Workers' comp.
There you go. So you got a lot of moving parts for a claim like that. But if it's written correctly, all of that stuff should be covered.
I have a question. Terrible scenario, but I need to talk about it. The soccer mom does leave, drives the car, and there's a catastrophic event. They're, of course, going to look at the fact that the brakes were recently done and say it was my fault. They could figure out some way that it was my fault. What kind of coverage do you have to have for that? Is there a clause in any kind of policy that you can buy to, you know, you cover? Obviously, we're not even ready to talk about umbrella policies, but, you know, will that help?
That's what you would need, because typically you're going to have $1 million limit. If you've got an agent that's worth anything, the difference between $500,000 and $1 million limit is very minimal. It's because most of your claims happen under $500,000. So to bump it up to $1 million is not a lot of money. So you've got a good agent. He's got you $1 million worth of auto liability and general liability and so forth. The umbrella is where that catastrophic claim
lands.
That's where it would land, because it's going to go above that $1 million limit into the umbrella.
I'm a small business. I'm generating $2 or $3 million worth of volume. I employ, you know, maybe a dozen people. What kind of umbrella would you recommend me have? I mean, do you have to look at the profit and loss statements, the location, the building, personal finance, personal wealth?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, you know. I mean, at what point do you just say, okay, that's enough? I could try to sell you insurance for every scenario, but you have to figure out what your appetite for risk is. Practically, I don't see too many claims over $3 to $5 million in average, you know, for catastrophic claims typically.
What about the owners having a personal umbrella as well as the business umbrella?
Well, if you've got a home and an auto, a personal umbrella makes a lot of sense. Some people that sell cars and drive on dealer tags, and you know, they kind of intermix their personal and their commercial a lot. A lot of times you can endorse a commercial garage policy for a personal umbrella. Usually doesn't cost much at all, because the chances of a claim are minimal. typically it's going to fall under another part of the policy. A lot of agents will throw that in there, but I've honestly, that's one where I've never actually seen a claim. I've seen personal umbrella claims on your homeowner's side, but when you do a personal umbrella endorsement on a commercial policy, I've never seen a claim fall there.
What if you're driving a company vehicle on personal time? Then, I mean,
it would depend on your state, but most of the states that I'm familiar with, I'm licensed in four. Your insurance follows the car. Always remember that rule. Insurance follows the car. Doesn't follow the driver. Follows the car. So you can pretty much do anything. And here's the scenario. That's a good question. So let's say in North Carolina anyway, personal acts are covered under a personal auto policy. So you hop out of your car and you get in your sister's car and you go up to the liquor store and you've had a little too much to drink and you get in an accident in your sister's car. Her insurance canceled last month because she's terrible at paying her bills. You get sued personally. Your personal auto policy will cover that claim. If all you have is a commercial auto policy and you're driving, you've got your personal vehicle on the commercial auto policy, it won't cover that personal acts lawsuit. But you can endorse the commercial policy to do that. It's called drive other car coverage. So there's so many little things when you start talking about it that will pop up.
Well, you know what it sounds like, ladies? When you sit down with your insurance agent, you need to do your own what-if scenarios with everyone to be sure that you're covered.
Your agent should be doing a lot of what-ifs with you. Because it's like Bambi said before, she doesn't know what she doesn't know.
That's true, but your agent doesn't know how you use how you operate. And so I find, as I sat down with my agent, Jordan, and I started explaining to him, he would start asking me questions. Well, how do you do this? And I realized how I operate changes what insurance I need. And so that open and that transparent. So every time we have a car change or we bring on a new employee or every time anything changes, I'm calling him, does this impact me? Do I need to do anything? Because I don't know what I don't know.
Shopware's innovative shop management system will give you back your time and put more money in your pocket. Make the switch today and watch technician efficiency gain 20%, enjoy increased recommended service, and even grow the highest parts profit margins ever with the smallest amount of work. You know, Steve from Ultimate Automotive says, I love that Shopware lets you complete every estimate on the inspection, and we even have a higher ARO, receive more approvals, and have had a significant increase in revenue. With our previous SMS, estimating was limited because it was so time-consuming. This impacted not only what we could sell on each customer's current visit, but also what we would have prepared for following visits. Hey, your peers are happy. Let Shopware work for you. Book a demo at getshopware.com. Bambi, let's do the next scenario.
Sure. And we kind of hit on it a little bit, but what if my employee is hurt at work? It could be in an accident in a car. It could be a lift. It could be I got a paper cut. You know, what happens if my employee is hurt at work?
Workers' comp. Here's the only thing when I thought about that question that I coach people about is this. Your insurance carrier will tell you to file every single claim. As an agent, I got the gray hair. And let me explain to you why I do this. But in most states, they keep track of your claims, okay? And if anybody familiar with what an experience mod is? Okay. So the state looks at you and the whole world of garages, and they compare what your claims are. So they're looking at your premium versus your payroll versus your claims. Are you good or better than the average garage? If you're better, they give you a credit. If you're worse, they give you a debit. That number can fluctuate dramatically. And sometimes it'll last for 3 years, okay, once you have a bump or a jump. The way to avoid some of that, obviously, is not to have a lot of claims. Here's the thing that agents don't talk to you about is shock losses, okay? So let's say in North Carolina, for instance, the cap now is approaching 20,000. So let's say you haven't had a claim in 3 years and you have a terrible claim. It's a $100,000 claim, but you haven't had anything in 3 years prior. They're going to cap that claim at $20,000, right? So it's not going to impact your mod as much because they figure you do a pretty good job. You just had one bad run of luck, right? So they'll cap that claim. Now, the year later, somebody gets a little cut on their finger and they go to the urgent care and it's a $180 bill and they file it on the workers' comp. guess what happens? They take the cap off. So if you've got something little that you know you're almost 100% sure is not going to develop into something big, man, I'm telling you. And in some states, they'll let you do a deductible, so it won't hit you as well. So ask your agent about a deductible. But the little ones, sometimes it makes sense to just pay them out of pocket, because then if you have that big one, you can get that shock loss treatment.
Ladies, how do you determine a little one? And I had that. We self-insured up to a certain amount, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was almost like I needed to be brought in to every injury that ever happened so that I could make a decision on how we handled any kind of small injury. And does that create complications, ladies?
For me, I'll tell you, I call Jordan. He's my insurance agent, and we bounce it, and he guides me. Don't file this yet. You have a certain amount of time. Don't file. Let's wait and
see. That's
right. And that's how it is. And then if it's something where he says no, he's experienced far more claims than I have. I've not walked through that claim process as many times as my insurance agent has. So I'm counting on his expertise, and I have that relationship, and I trust him that he's going to guide me correctly.
Most larger insurance companies have, but I know Federated has a helpline, and you can actually call and speak to an attorney and get counsel on a situation. But at this, we just had a situation last Thursday where one of our employees got something in the eye, and it was fine at first, but then he came back after lunch and eye was red. Take him to the eye doctor. How bad is this? And then let me know. And then we ended up just paying for it, and he got his ointment. He was good. I know that, like I said, Federated, a lot of the other companies, they do have a dedicated insurance legal helpline.
Perfect. Excellent. Exactly what you need to have. And I want to thank Bob Pulverenti, Executive Director of the IGONC, for helping us get David on here with us today. Thank you so much, Bob. And of course, to Bambi Crozier and Kim Auerenheimer, along with David Curry. Kim, I'll go to you next. Hey, I'm loving this. I am learning so much, and I know our audience is going to appreciate this. This will be one of those high watched and listened to episodes. Kim, what do you got next?
Okay, we just talked about if an employee gets hurt at work. We had a situation where we actually had a customer that got severely injured, and not to draw it out, but she had to go to a home for the rest of her life. Oh, wow. It happened at our property. What happened was, long story short, she had a dog on a leash. We have stairs in our property that we rented. So we rented this property. We had stairs that did not have handrails, and we had been asking the landlord for handrails. We need handrails, and they wouldn't let us do the improvement. They hadn't done it yet, et cetera. She tangled up with the dog and went down the stairs and was never the same. So my question, and actually this is more of a suggestion, but David, I'd like you to add on. If you are leasing a building, you better read your lease as far as coverage for customers. So David, you want to maybe, what if a customer gets hurt at the shop?
Well, I'm sure she retained an attorney, and at that point, everybody's involved.
Her son happens to be an assistant attorney for the state of Tennessee.
Yeah.
So she had connections.
Yeah, so I'm sure the landlord got dragged into it as well as you guys. It makes sense to look at your lease. Typically, you're on the demand side of that contract, where they are demanding that you have $1 million worth of liability, that you've got premises legal liability included in case you do something negligent, damage the building. You got premises liability. So they're going to insist on all this. And most lately now, they're looking for at least a $1 million umbrella as well. Those things are required of your landlord. You might want to make sure your landlord's got a little insurance as well, just to kind of, because like you said, sometimes it's not your fault. But what if that landlord had no policy at all, know? So if he's asking you for a certificate and he wants to be named as additional insured on your policy, why not ask him for a certificate from him in case something happens or he doesn't hold up his end of the contract by maintaining the property? So it's not a bad idea to ask him for his insurance either.
And coming from prior to this career, I was in commercial property management. So I was dealing with lease negotiation contracts. But it's shocking, some of the contracts are out there that will basically say, if anything happens, your insurance is responsible. And that had to go, I mean, that has to go through court action to really say whose insurance is responsible. You were right. It was a co-insurance situation. It was both of ours got involved. But read your lease and make sure that if you're trying to get something on your property to keep somebody from getting injured, that you keep a paper trail of your requests and such. So,
not a bad idea to have an attorney look at it, ever, you know.
Thank you for that. Okay, Kim, let's do the next one. Probably a scenario that happens often.
Often. What if the vehicle is in for an oil service and we forget to put oil in, we blow that engine up? That has not happened, thank God, for us. But that I'm sure it has happened. But what if we actually cause damage to a vehicle like a blown engine? Is that covered under our insurance?
The reason I put that one kind of high up is because it happens a lot. So when I kind of prioritize this, I looked at severity claims. You know, what's the big one? But what happens more often is that claim. What happens with an inexperienced agent is they don't look at what you touch. Poor workmanship, as a rule, is not covered in my industry. If you're not good at what you do, they don't want to cover you. But they'll cover the consequential damage all day long. So, for instance, you do something to that motor and it catches fire in the customer's garage. They get it home. It catches fire, burns up the car, burns up the house. Thank God the people get out. Let's have a nice, happy ending to this, right? So what's covered? Well, the consequential damage is the car and the house. That's all covered. Is the engine covered? A lot of policies aren't going to cover that engine. You touched it. It was your poor workmanship. However, because we specialize, we've often felt that there's a gray area here. A lot of times you're working around an engine or you touch it as part of what you're doing. So technically the insurance carrier could say, well, you touched that engine, you know, when you were doing X, Y, Z, so we're not going to cover it. What we do is we add, here's the coverage you want to look for. It's called mechanics, errors, and omissions. So make sure that you've got mechanics E&O on your policy. It typically has about anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000 annual limit. It'll cover a couple engines. After that, if you're that poor at your work, they're not going to cover it. But they're going to cover those kind of things that you touch. So make sure you have mechanics E&O. The other coverage form that'll pick up a lot of that exposure is called broad form products on your general liability. So either one of those will help pick up the things that you touch and cover those poor workmanship issues. Okay. So with the oil change thing, it's not a big deal because all you got to do is cover, you touch the oil. We're not going to cover the oil. That's not a big deal, right? But if you touch the engine and then the engine blows up, that's a big deal because the engine is going to be excluded unless you have that endorsement.
Is errors and omissions have to do with fraud also?
No, you're looking more at a professional liability at that point.
Okay.
Now, fraud on an employee's part on your behalf is covered under your crime coverages. That's a whole other portion of the policy. You can get coverage for fraud.
Thank you for that. Very in-depth and important to know. Bambi?
So, do I need commercial umbrella insurance? What does it cover? Is there a place where there is too much coverage and I may become sexy for lawsuits?
So, remember, umbrellas do not fill gaps. If you don't have flood coverage on your building, you don't have flood coverage on your umbrella. Think of it, it's just going to extend what you already have. So, for instance, there's a racing exclusion on your auto policy. So, if you're caught drag racing and you get ticketed and there's an accident, they can limit how much they're going to pay for that claim, right? Well, racing, if it's excluded on the auto policy, excluded on the umbrella. So, sexual harassment, unless you've got an endorsed policy, is not covered under your general liability policy. Well, it's not covered on your umbrella either. It just extends what you already have.
It's a great point. Sexual harassment has to be an endorsed rider.
Correct.
The riders in that binder is crazy. I mean, it's amazing. If you have a good coverage.
I'd recommend everybody have at least $1 million. Here's the thing to look at. Do you have a lot of auto exposure? Because that's where catastrophic claims come in. Or do you have a lot of loaner vehicles? Do you have a lot of commercial vehicles, shop vehicles? Are you driving a lot of personal vehicles? Does your kid have a car that's on the policy? those kind of things. Mm-hmm. If you've got a lot of auto exposure, a lot of moving parts, you probably need a bigger umbrella, at least a million, and then anywhere from 2 to 5, depending on what you got going on.
You just don't tell anybody, Bambi. Don't tell anybody right. You have it.
Don't tell anybody how much you got. Yeah.
But I never tell anybody what to get because I don't know what their appetite is for risk. And God forbid they kill somebody the next week. And I'm sitting here saying, oh man, I only told them to get 3 million. I don't know. It's up to you what you want to spend, you know?
That is a conversation that I had with Jordan, and he was very transparent and said, you don't want to be too sexy, but you need to have enough to mitigate your risk, period.
But he didn't tell you a number, did he?
No, nor would he.
Good. That's good. He's good. He's a good agent.
I saw you pull the binder off of there. Is that your insurance stuff?
It is. It's my binder because I was looking at I was looking at the terrorism. There's terrorism in here. I was looking at my extra little add-ons, the sexual harassment, the crime. You know, there's all kinds of extras in here, and I feel good about this. So, okay, question number 7. What happens if we can't get calls or the internet or the powers to actually run our business, the business interruption again?
Here's one of these fine print things that I love to talk to people about. So you've got your business interruption. We talked about that earlier. Actual loss sustained. It's going to cover your payroll and your lost income, that kind of thing. So the power's out. We've had some big hurricanes in North Carolina that would knock us out for 2 to 4 weeks, right? Are you covered for that? Yes, number one, but it has to be a covered cause of loss. So here's the issue. You have that big storm. The power is out. Is it because there was a flood at the substation? Because flood's not a covered cause of loss. So even though you have some coverage for power outages built in to most of your policies, it's for a covered cause of loss. So if flood's the proximate cause to trigger the power outage, then they're probably not going to cover you, right? Here's the other one that really gets you. So they'll say, we're going to cover you for power outage up to 30 days or up to a certain dollar figure, depending on the policy. But then if you go in the fine print, guess what they exclude? They will exclude overhead transmission lines. So they're going to tell you that they're going to cover you for a power outage. But then when you look in the form, it says overhead transmission lines are not covered. So you got to have an agent that's really digging into the stuff. I'm telling you, 9 out of 10 policies don't cover overhead transmission lines.
It's crazy. We just had a dump truck run and take out the lines in our area. We were without our phones for almost a week. Granted, it was only a week, no phones, no internet, but that really impacted our business, which is why I put it on the list. I'm like, man, if this had been any longer, I'd have been in a world of hurt.
So just make sure that the form has the endorsement for overhead transmission lines.
That's a great, great piece of advice.
It costs money. It's about $150 to $300 a year, depending on the limits and stuff. But, you know, if you've got issues, you might want to consider spending that money.
Mm-hmm. Great, great advice. Bambi, you're next.
What if there's a big hailstorm and it damages all of our company cars and all of our client cars outside?
Well, first of all, you got to have comprehensive on the vehicle, right? Mm-hmm. For your company cars. If you've got liability only, you got nothing, right? Mm-hmm. For each of the company cars, you're going to have a deductible for each one. Typically, most good agents are going to have what we call an aggregate or a stop loss on your garage keeper's coverage. So the garage keepers can be written two ways. If you're coastal, it's hard to get it under the direct and primary. But anywhere else, you should be able to get direct and primary form versus legal. The legal liability form, which covered the garage keeper's form, which covers the customer's vehicles. You with me? The legal will only cover it if it's your fault. So you drive it into a wall or drop it off a lift. They're going to cover that. The direct and primary is going to cover everything. Theft, vandalism, acts of God, whatever it is. All right. If you've got direct and primary, which most of our clients do, you want to make sure that you have a stop loss on the deductible for events like this. And typically it's 5 times the deductible. So if you've got a $500 deductible and you had 15 cars damaged in the hailstorm, you're only going to have to pay it 5 times and then it stops. So the best you can probably get is a high limit. So first of all, you got to have a high limit. If you've only got a $30,000 garage keeper's limit and you've got 20 cars on the lot, you don't have enough coverage. So you can pick a limit anywhere from 30 to half a million. All right. Keep in mind, they pay actual cash value too. It's not replacement cost. So when you're determining the limit, look at it as blue book value. Okay. So you're going to have a $500 deductible typically on a direct and primary with a 5x stop loss. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense that I go too fast?
No, I get that.
Question is, I think most of us live in the South except for Carm, is every single type of weather event, including flood?
Direct. That's a good question. One of the few places that flood is covered is under a direct and primary garage keeper's form. They will cover flood under that form. Your building can float away and it's not covered, but the cars are going to be covered.
The other thing on that too is we have a retaining wall behind us that collapsed, and it's $100,000 to repair it.
Wow.
It was caused by the apartment complex that was built behind us up on the hill and their watershed. That is it's a different situation because it wasn't a natural disaster. It's watershed.
Still flood.
And if you don't have flood insurance because we were up on a hill.
Still flood.
So yeah, there's some interesting.
Still flood. Who's liable to have a flood?
Anybody.
That's the answer, Kim. Anybody's liable for a flood. You just never know.
I love where this is going, but I want to say something really important. We are not giving conclusive advice or expert advice here. I just want you to know that. I don't want anybody to pick up the phone one day because unless they have a liability policy against it. Carm, David said, Kim said, Bambi said. Okay, so that you all know, this is a great, great discussion on what you all need to pay attention to and look at.
And I'm actually making notes of what I need to go back and make sure and double check. You know, overhead transmission lines, it's right there.
I know. And so just think about this episode and the value it's going to be for the entire industry to listen to this over a couple of times. Now, as everyone knows, we take everything you say, not everything, we take about 70% of everything that is said on all of our podcasts, Town Hall Academy, Remarkable Results. We put them on the show notes page. We call them the key talking points. And you know what? You can actually take that, cut, copy, and paste, print that show page, and go into a meeting and let it become an agenda, no matter what topic we cover here. And I'm not sure everybody says thanks much to me for doing
Keep
Talking Points. Thank you,
Carm.
And it's not because we spend the time and invest in the time to do that. It's your words, not mine, that are so key and critical in paying it forward in our industry. What's next? Number 9, Kim.
Someone accuses us of unfair employment practices.
I think I mentioned that your general liability policy, the unendorsed, does not cover a sexual harassment claim. So the coverage that we will add to that general liability policy is employment-related practices coverage. Now, you can get a standalone employment-related practices policy if you need it. But typically, right. it's for a small business, it's more economical just to endorse the general liability policy. And you have to talk it through with your agent. Typically, what it's going to cover is wrongful dismissal, unfair hiring practices, sexual harassment, and discrimination claims, mm-hmm. where an employee sues you for doing something stupid. The one thing, and my parts stores and my franchise, non-franchise auto dealers have a little more exposure, but garage owners have it too, is the third party. So a good-looking man or woman comes into your shop and, you know, a customer, and one of your employees says something sideways to him, you get sued for a harassment claim. That could very well be denied as sexual harassment or discrimination. And a lot of times these endorsements don't cover third party. They just really cover your employee and you. Okay. So you may want to ask, hey, am I covered for third party claims where a customer has an issue with us? And that's it in a nutshell. You just got to pick a limit. 9 out of 10 times, these claims really don't have a lot of weight. If you're a good employer, a lot of times they're kind of bogus, but the legal fees can add up. So I'll tell people, look, you may not want to cover $1 million harassment claim unless you're, you know, one of these guys that doesn't do the right thing, you know, but you want to get enough to have a good lawyer. So a $50,000 or $100,000 endorsement onto a policy is $200 or $300 a year. It's not a whole lot of money.
You mentioned third party, a scenario, parts store driver comes in the building, says something to your service advisor, technician of the opposite gender. Is that covered?
that's part of that third party liability that you have to discuss with them. From the precedent that I've seen, the legal precedent I've seen, the biggest thing you can do for harassment and discrimination is to have a process. I don't know if you have a handbook in a way that you describe how you'll handle things like that. But if you have an open door policy where a woman handles a woman's claims, a man handles a man's claims, and then you address them right away and you try to fix them and you're open and above board about everything, typically they don't have a lot of legal precedent to stand on for a big claim, as long as you're reacting properly. That's as critical as anything else, is making sure that you're managing the risk well for those kind of things.
Before I say goodbye to you all and thank the audience for being here, is there any final words that you guys would love to offer?
Your insurance partner should be just that, should be a partner in your business. If you have somebody that cares about your issues and the what ifs in your business enough, I believe anybody we work with needs to be a partner in our business and we're just not a customer of theirs. So if your insurance company is not a partner in your business, you need to call IGO or you need to call Federated or you need to call somebody. You need to have somebody that cares about your business as much as you do. I know that's asking a lot. But I know that after something happened, I got a call immediately. We had a tornado come through Nashville. And then a week later we had COVID start. I had two phone calls the day after the tornado. The very next morning, and I got a text the day that we shut down asking if we were okay. Just, are you okay? And somebody, you need to have a partner in your business and not just an insurance company.
Thanks for saying that. I'm going to tease all of you, and I don't know the exact date, but within the next 4 weeks, we're going to do a Town Hall Academy called The Trusted Advisor. And to your point, Kim, we're going to have a lawyer on, a CPA, a banker, a coach, and an insurance agent. David, you could come back if you'd like. And to me, those are the five key trusted advisors, almost, if you will, your board of directors that will help you steer a really good ship. So thanks for teasing me on that, Kim. Thank you. Bambi?
I'd like to start by saying thank you, Carm, for your key talk points. Those are phenomenal. So if you have not heard a thank you, then thank you. And then I also want to say, and I posted this recently on my own page, it says, fear is the lengthened shadow of ignorance. A lot of times things will happen as a business owner that you've never experienced before, and you're fearful because you don't know who to talk to about it. You don't know, you're embarrassed. Any number of emotions can go through. And so having those trusted partners is really huge. I am so thankful for this because I'm walking away with these tidbits that I need to go back to my agent. Drive other car coverage, errors and omissions, overhead transmission lines, ask my landlord for a certificate of insurance, third party claims, stop loss versus legal. What do I need to go back now and say, hey, am I covered? Because I thought I was looking pretty insurance sexy until like I had this call. Then I was like, what the hell do I got?
I love it. Thank you so much. I have to tell you, that fear quote, I heard this quote in a movie, fear makes you stupid.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
That's so simple. I've actually said it a couple of times on the podcast here recently within the last couple of months. David, is there any quick summary you could give us in a sec here?
Again, find somebody that you trust and that you can work with. And if you're out there and you're a business owner that does not sit down with your insurance agent, either because you won't take the time or because he hasn't asked, ask him, sit down and talk to him. And, you know, if the guy doesn't have a checklist, ask him, where's your checklist? Because I've got a lot of this stuff up here, but I still use a checklist because I don't want to miss things. You know, so take the time to go through it and kind of find out what you don't know. That's the big thing. A lot of times, you don't know what you don't know. So take the time to talk to them and learn about it because it could happen to you. You just never know. All these things we talked about are real world things that happen all the time.
Insurance shouldn't be painful. You should not look at an insurance agent coming into your place as a thorn in your palm. They need to be a trusted advisor.
Having proper insurance should allow you to sleep better at night.
Yes.
It does me.
Yeah, but on the flip side, you're paying for something you never want to use. I mean, I get it, guys. Sometimes I'm not your favorite person. I get it.
But if any of these what ifs happen, you are suddenly my very favorite.
Yes.
Exactly right. You'll be buying Christmas gifts, knowing, yeah, the minute you have a claim, and it's an easy one to deal with because David had a good checklist.
Just because you haven't had a what if, don't assume that you won't, because I've had four of these already that we just talked about.
And don't think if you have a what if that you're bad, because you're not. Life happens. Things on here are going to happen. You're not bad.
Hey, thank you to Bambi Crozier from Car Clinic Lowell, Arkansas, Kim Auernheimer, CS Automotive, Brentwood, Tennessee, and David Corey, AAICIC. You never actually told us what that means. We'll learn about it on the next time. Senior Account Executive, IGO Insurance. Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.